Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Look, today I would like to start with a comment on the murder of Grace Milne, having received a number of media queries about this tragedy. Firstly, I cannot imagine the grief of her family and what they will be experiencing and feeling right now. And my thoughts and prayers are with her father, David, who is in the country, her mother, Gillian, who cannot be here, and her wider family, friends, and loved ones. You know, from the Kiwis I have spoken to, there is this overwhelming sense of hurt and shame that this has happened in our country, a place that prides itself on our hospitality, on our manaakitanga, especially to those who are visiting our shores. And so, on behalf of New Zealand, I want to apologise to Grace's family. Your daughter should have been safe here, and she wasn't, and I'm sorry for that. I've advised the family through the police that if there is anything we can do to assist, we are here to help with that. Looking at the week ahead, on Tuesday I will be in Auckland spreading some Christmas cheer on my regular Tuesday morning shows, and then in Wellington for the house. On Wednesday I'll be here in Wellington and attending the house, and also be receiving the Cook Islands High Commissioner designate. On Thursday I'll be making a housing announcement in Auckland with Minister Mahuta, and we'll be attending and presenting at the New Zealand Rugby Awards. And on Friday, I have meetings in Auckland. Look, today though, you will have perhaps seen by now that I am joined by the Minister for ACC, the Honourable Ian Lees-Galloway, to announce the government's decision with regard to ACC levies. And I hope by now you have some details in front of you in that regard. You may remember that ACC first proposed in September to increase the petrol levy by nearly 2 cents. It was approximately 1.9 cents that they recommended, alongside an increase in the average motor vehicle levy of around 12% from $114 to $128. These were recommendations that ACC are mandated to make every 2 years, and are made in line with the funding policy statement gazetted by the previous government. The government, certainly the Minister and I, have made it very clear then that a compelling case would be needed in order for those recommendations to be accepted wholesale. Cabinet can take a much broader consideration of the public interest, and it's clear that many motorists, certainly at the time, were feeling a lot of pain at the petrol pump. Cabinet did indeed make the final decision on levy rates based on wider public interest, taking into account the feedback we received from public consultation. I think it's fair to say that feedback was fairly overwhelming. Cabinet was not bound to follow ACC's recommendation. We considered the wider public good when making the final decision, including cost of living considerations. As a result, Cabinet has concluded that ACC levies will not increase. Further, we will make life easier for business owners by decreasing the work levies paid by employers and self-employed people. The average work levies paid by employers and self-employed people will decrease from 72 cents to 67 cents per $100 of liable earnings. This decrease in the work levy will save New Zealand businesses around $100 million over the next 2 years compared to the current rates. Alongside the reduction in work levies paid by employers and self-employed, the motorist and earnings levy will remain the same for the next 2 years. The average motor vehicle levies, which include the annual licence levy and petrol levy, will remain at $113.94. The earnings levy paid through PAYE, or invoiced directly through ACC for self-employed people, will remain at its current level of $1.21 per $100 of liable earnings. Look, I do want to make a particular point of the advice that was received, though, from both MB and Treasury, which supports our decision. MB's independent actuary pointed out that, quote, charging lower levies for the next 2 years would not be expected to significantly impact account solvency, and ACC has sufficient assets to cover payments for many years under any plausible scenario, end quote. Treasury advised that they support the proposed reduction in the work levy and maintaining the current earners and motor vehicle average levy rates, primarily due to the high solvency levels of the accounts and because they consider the assumption to be conservative for a statutory scheme. Look, ACCC is a groundbreaking and important scheme. Neither country has a comprehensive no-fault accident insurance scheme providing cover to all its visitors. It's essential that we ensure its ongoing viability. We have done that today, whilst also looking at the interest of consumers. Happy to take questions.
Just in terms of the vehicle risk ratings.
Yes.
Was that policy a tax on the poor?
Oh, certainly the data certainly demonstrates that those who are on lower incomes do tend to own, as you would assume, tend to own vehicles that are lower price point and often therefore have a different risk rating. So we know that this change will mean that 32% of motorists in that category will pay less as a result.
Is it fair to make people that do have those safe cars that are less likely to be hurt in accidents pay for those?
Well, ultimately the question is, does it change behaviour in the purchase of a car? And it doesn't. And so, yes, we want people to have full information. We want them to know whether or not their vehicle is safer than another potential purchase they might make. And what Cabinet has agreed today is we do want to look at ways of improving that upfront information to motorists when they purchase a car. What we were doing here through the risk rating that the last government put in actually did not adequately deal with the information provision at the point someone makes that critical decision.
Yeah, I would concur with what the Prime Minister has said. What we need to do is make sure that that information is available to people so that they can make an informed decision. Having that attached to what they pay on their registration doesn't assist with that informed decision, and the evidence demonstrates that it's had absolutely no impact on people's purchasing decisions. So it hasn't been fit for purpose in the way it's been used so far. We think we can use it in a better way, not by determining what the levies should be, but by giving people better upfront information.
How does that marry up with international practices? Because a lot of other countries incentivise people to have newer cars.
Yeah, look, my assumption on what we see overseas is that the information provision also is pretty clear. And I think that's where we need to do better, is making sure that New Zealanders, at the point that they're making a purchasing decision, have all of the information about the relative safety of the car that they're purchasing.
Are you concerned that the ACC's request for an increase to the levy differed so strongly from what NBN's Treasury was like?
So, no,
not at all. And in fact, the actuarial advice was that both recommendations were reasonable recommendations in the circumstances. ACC is operating under a funding policy that was set by the previous government that requires them to make changes to their levies that would that aims to get the solvency rate of each account to 105% over a 10-year horizon. I suppose it's essentially what the decision that we have made today is that we would like to get to that point faster. We don't think it's appropriate for people to be paying higher levies than necessary when the solvency rates are as strong as they are. We can still maintain ACC's strong position, but get it to a point, the position that it should be at, over a faster pace than the funding policy that the previous government put in place allows.
How are you getting into that position faster if you're at the levies level?
Because at the moment they're essentially overfunded. So all three accounts are over 110% funded. The funding policy requires that we aim to have them between 100 and 110% funded with an aim of a midpoint of 105%. They're all over the 110%. So by keeping the rates as they are, we anticipate that will mean that the solvency rate will drop steadily over time, aiming towards getting it to that 105%.
Prime Minister, you mentioned the payment and petrol pump that people are feeling. How much did that and the tax on your government, all those excise tax and regional fuel tax, inform your thinking around the 1.9%?
Oh, we're constantly mindful of the issue overall of the cost of living. Of course, here it's not just There it's or what's happening with the different accounts and, of course, registration. So we are, of course, mindful of cost of living. The issue here was there the justification? Because we, of course, have to also balance making sure that ACC is in good shape. We could do that whilst also making sure we didn't see that increase unnecessarily. I'll just check whether or not there's any other questions that are relevant to the Minister before I... Oh, okay. Great. Thank you.
You've spoken to a book like that had a lot about the maybe not departure answers of Senior Barclay.
Very briefly.
And what did he give you an update on what exactly has happened? Is it,
it is the way that it's best characterised is that it is an operational matter, and therefore, unfortunately, I'm going to be very boring on this. And there's not much that I more than I can say on it. It's appropriate that this remains with with the public service, and they are dealing with it now.
That he hasn't been working for the last month and a half. This is the government's flagship policy. It's $2 billion.
I cannot actually confirm the time frames. That's a legitimate point. Can't actually confirm that. What I can say, because I have seen some of the speculation that has been in media reporting, is that the Chief Executive, Andrew Crisp, advises me that this has nothing to do with the KiwiBuild policy or the implementation of the KiwiBuild program.
What about the transfer of the unit from the
Ministry? Again, it has nothing to do with the KiwiBuild program, and it has nothing to do with the implementation of the KiwiBuild program. And I won't say anything beyond that.
Do you have any concerns that this will jeopardise or compromise the KiwiBuild program?
No, I'm seeking assurances, of course, from the Minister that his work continues. Again, I've already stated this has nothing to do with that work program. Beyond that, I just can't comment. It's a matter for the Chief Executive.
Will the government sign the UN Migration Compact?
So that's officially voted on the 17th of December. Some claims have been made around the legal standing of that document, even though it makes it very, very clear that, of course, a nation maintains its sovereign rights. And that it doesn't impact on our ability to act as we dictate on policy, and that it's not legally binding. Some have questioned that. We're seeking further advice. And again, as I say, it's not signed until the 17th of December. It's a purely ceremonial what's been attended. My understanding is a formal vote takes place on the 17th of December.
Is it fair for the Housing Minister to offer a no comment on Stephen Barclay's absence from the role because it wouldn't be appropriate for him to get involved?
Yes, that is absolutely fair.
When he publicly celebrated Stephen Barclay's appointment to the role, will he be commented on that before?
Oh, I see that. It's completely different. These set of circumstances, it's just not appropriate for the Minister or for me to comment.
It's the particular circumstances.
As I've said, these are matters that are not to be dealt with by us.
When do you think the public might know more about what's going on?
I unfortunately couldn't give you that timeline.
There's been numerous...
Again, I did advise you that I would be boring on this matter.
What is your expectation for when the issue will be resolved? Like when will we know?
I cannot set that expectation. This is a matter relating to an individual public servant, and it is to be dealt with by the Chief Executive.
The government has commented on individual public servants and their suitability for role, particularly in the Wally Homepack case recently. So how is this different from that?
Again, this is a matter that has been dealt with by the Chief Executive. Again, I could get to the different statutory processes for those different appointments, but there are distinctions.
Has there been a relationship breakdown?
Again, I'm not going to give any further comment other than to say that this is something that needs to be dealt with by and appropriately by the Chief Executive. There is nothing more I can say on this. This is not a matter for me. It is a matter for the Chief Executive.
This isn't a sustainable answer for the Minister.
It is the only answer I can give. I have highlighted, as there has been some interest in this question, that it has nothing to do with the KiwiBuild policy. It has nothing to do with implementing the KiwiBuild program.
Will you therefore urge the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development to release a statement that actually gives us any information?
And that is, and as I say, it is a matter for them to manage, as they see fit, in the way, including in the way that they deal with any line of questioning.
But there's three branches of government here that shut down on it. What do you expect the public to think?
Again, the public speculation has been on an area where I've given clarification. Beyond that, it's not for me to comment on an individual public servant here. In this case, it needs to be dealt with by the chief executive.
Do you have any concern over the public's confidence in Kiwi Building?
No, because as I say, I've clarified that this is not related to that program.
Do you think the housing minister is doing a good job of running Kiwi
Building? Yes, I do.
What do you make of National attacking the Global Compact? Like, was that a surprise for you?
Yes, particularly given that they signed up to instigating it.
Do you think pulling out of a person company might not be in?
Look, that's you're asking me about National Party policy, and really it's for them to justify their position.
But you're not indicating that you're kind of reviewing it.
No. What I've indicated is that we've sought further advice because some claims have been made, and we're seeking advice on that to demonstrate whether or not that's correct or not. Right, I've just given you the view of what we as a government have put forward and the work we plan to do in the lead up to it being it needing to be signed by various countries on the 17th of December. This is not about individual positions, this is the work programme that the government's undertaking. This is a decision that we have been discussing as a cabinet. I don't see this as being an individual party position. As I say, I've presented the government's view.
The National says that you're spending $700,000 a day on inquiry.
Yes, I saw that.
Well, what do you say to that?
I said they're wrong, Barry. And I said they were wrong the first time that they said that as well. Look, there has been a tally, I think that we might even be sharing that with you. The State Services Commission has been keeping an official record, of course, as they're interested in the various bodies of work that we have going on across government. Their tally at the moment reads, we've got 8 inquiries underway, there's been 20 reviews, we've got 13 advisory groups. That takes us to about 41, and I think we might be circulating with them. I'll share that with you. Look, some of the things that have been included, and this is not a comprehensive rebuttal, but some of what they've included has, for instance, included the cost of the Royal Commission into abuse and state care. Look, if they don't see that as an appropriate commission to undertake, then that's their prerogative. They've included the cost of Pike River recovery. Again, if they don't wish to undertake that piece of work, then that's for them. But those are two significant parts of the costs that they have used, and I would argue are things that broadly have New Zealanders support.
So what are you spending today?
What are we spending today? I'm giving you the number of what's underway. I don't, Barry, have a breakdown of the cost of those individual ones that are on that tally, but it's fair to say, given that they claimed we have 206 underway, I would obviously dispute that. Some may have included that are basic business as usual, work that you just do when you're in government. So, yes.
I
announced
this morning about opening up ministers' diaries.
Yes.
Why have you decided to do that?
Oh, look, you know, yes, there's been interest in these questions. And we do receive a number of requests. This is one way we can simplify that process and also give some transparency around what ministers are doing day to day.
Do you think it's necessary to hold them to account for what
we do? Oh, but just broadly speaking, that's already happening, to be fair. Each of us receive a number of written questions around what we're doing on a daily basis. This is a way that we're able to bring it all together and just release it as a matter of course.
Why did that take so long? There was talk about doing this about a year ago.
Yeah, we've done a little bit of work on how we can simplify the process because, you know, making sure that we're undertaking it in a way that, you know, eases a bit of the administrative burden. You'll know that we received thousands of written questions. We've received, if my memory serves, more in 1 year than we put in 3 years. So it is about trying to streamline the process we use for this as well. And so there was a bit of that involved too.
Would you consider that we have the diaries of your MPs that are not because of the executive?
Oh, no, look, the Official Information Act, for good reason, has not applied to MPs. And there's good cause for that. So no, we're not implying a change in the way that the OIA is applied.
Here is the line going to be for ministers who might have to be in the case, grant officers might have 10 days, well, kind of meet the years presented as a Minister of Finance. So
Is that not being voted?
Yeah, and look, you know, we by and large, of course, it's when you are wearing your ministerial hat. So those are things that are included, and that's as it should be. So when you're acting as a minister, that's what should be included in the vote. I'm not going to get into individual bits, but by and large, the OIA doesn't apply to party events and LEC meetings and things like that.
Given how the immigration
ministers respond to
or grapple with the murder of
Preston? How should they respond? How should they grapple with it? You know, I think we've probably already seen the response from New Zealanders and how they're feeling about it. And the overwhelming sense I get is that, you know, this is something we feel immense heartbreak for the family, but also, you know, the sense of collective shame. You know, we pride ourselves on being a place where people are welcome and where they're safe, and that hasn't happened in this case. And so I feel the sense that New Zealanders are carrying it quite personally.
It sounded like you were carrying it quite personally too. You sound quite emotional talking about it. What is it particularly about this case that you so emotional?
Oh, look, I don't think I'm alone in feeling that way. I think all New Zealanders will just feel that they're heartbreaking for that family.
And is it the role, I guess, of the Prime Minister's office to apologise on behalf of New Zealand for it?
Not necessarily. But it's just something that I sense that actually New Zealanders may have wanted to convey, and I'm in a position perhaps where I'm able to convey that. It's just a sense I picked up from New Zealanders that you know, this particular case, you know, feels probably quite personal to a lot of people.
Just a question for Mr. Emily Calloway, if you don't mind. Hi. On the UN Compact, are there any policies in place at the moment, or anything you're working on that you see could have been impacted in any way from this migration pact being set up?
No, not at all. It's not binding. And it certainly does reflect a negotiated point of view, negotiated by in the order of 180 different nations. So there'll be aspects of it that don't entirely align with our policy. But I don't have a concern, pending the advice that we have sought, that it would impact on the work that we're doing or any of our current settings because it isn't binding.
So I guess unlike US and Australia, and Australia's reasoning for pulling out of this, that's based on specific policies that they see being impacted or don't align with this UN compact, we don't have those same concerns.
No, as I say, pending that advice that we've sought, so just to be sure that that wouldn't impact our sovereign right to set our own immigration settings. Certainly that, as far as we can see, that's made quite clear in the document.
We would not sign an agreement that did not give us control of our own immigration settings. We would not.
Prime Minister, on a different issue, the Children's Commission wants to index benefits for children with wages and price inflation like we do with the super. Is that something that you would look at or consider?
Oh, as you know, the expert advisory group that we have underway is looking into welfare issues. They're considering a whole range of issues. But otherwise, the Children's Commissioner is rightly raising that we have a number of children who are living in households where there's just not enough to get by. That's something, of course, is of concern to this government. We're legislating that we have to lift the number of children living in poverty and lift the number of children in poverty out of poverty. So obviously we're focused on it, but there are a range of ways to do that. We're still really looking at different advice on some of the options.
On that issue, ideologically, people have defended in the past. They said super is something you earn over your lifetime, and that fights against the wage growth, and benefits are not, so they can earn it something else. Do you agree with that view, or do you think that that's
helpful? I think it's actually ultimately about having a workable system where a safety net is a safety net that people are able to adequately survive on. And some argue indexation is the way to maintain that, and some argue that there are other ways that you can do that. That's why we've ultimately had the Welfare Working Group doing work in this space.
The Auckland City Mission says that demand for food parcels is up 27% on last year. You set that child poverty reduction as a top priority.
And at the same time, since July, obviously we've put in place the families package. We know that we'll be making a difference to family incomes because that also goes to families who would be receiving a benefit. I'm looking to pop in and see, for instance, the City Mission before Christmas. I'll hopefully drill into a little bit more about what they're seeing on the front line, because that should be starting to make a difference. It came in July, and I'm really interested to see what difference they're seeing between this year and last year. One of the things that I would also expect is, you know, I am hoping that people in need are coming forward. You know, I did get a sense in the past that we haven't always had the most welcoming work and income system. Through last winter, we actively encouraged people who needed housing and housing assistance to come forward, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's having affected every level of our social services.
Just that big figure of more than 100,000 kids not getting enough, but have you done enough in the first year?
So that's from the Child Poverty Monitor that you've utilised that. Obviously that data wouldn't necessarily be taking into account the changes that we've made since July, I don't think. So look, there's no question there is more to do. We are looking to change the law to hold ourselves to account on child poverty. And of course, in New Zealand, no one wants to see kids going without, you know, a decent, healthy meal. So no question, there is more to do.
Is changing the law enough?
No. No, of course, but changing the law means that we are to be held accountable on some of those figures. So it lays the foundation.
And is reducing child poverty within 10 years still a realistic goal?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we are a nation with enough collective will, we can make changes that will make a difference. The families package was a start. More than 380,000 families who on average, once it's fully rolled out, will be receiving an extra $75 a week. Can you ask any family? That's a big difference.
When will the public get certainty and clarity?
I'll make this the last question. Thanks, Toby.
When will the public get certainty and clarity around the same
that's a question for the Chief Executive. Okay. Thanks, Mel.